Technology has made the world a smaller place, but there is still so much we do not know. Every week, Postcards takes you on a trip of exploration and discovery. From a small village in Afghanistan to a protected cultural heritage site in South America. From Africa's amazing natural landscapes to the most advanced tech displays in the world. Postcards, where you meet the world without actually taking a trip. Postcards.
Hello and welcome to Postcards, a show which takes you across borders without actually leaving home. I'm Wen Jie. Prisoners in Kenya have been given the right to register to vote in the country's presidential election this August. It follows a change in the law, which has been especially welcomed by female inmates at Langata Women's Prison. Here's Bob Jones with this postcard from Kenya.
The Kenyan government is giving the prison population a vested interest in the future of their country. This voter registration process means the women here will be able to vote for the first time in the upcoming presidential elections in August. The prison is home to more than 500 female inmates who've been convicted for crimes ranging from murder to simple petty offences. Wanja Waijanjo is serving a life sentence at Langata. She says she finally feels as though she is part of the country because she will be taking part in the voting process, even though it's from behind bars.
I'm serving a life sentence, but as a prisoner, I was very happy when we were told that we shall be voting because we now feel like we are like other Kenyans. We thought we were a forgotten people, but when we were informed that we will be voting, we were very happy, even though we have been told that we are only going to be voting for the president.
Unlike other citizens, who will be voting for governors, senators and local representatives, inmates will only be allowed to vote for the president. Another voting prisoner, Konkidia Ondieki, welcomes the change.
It's not a question of changing my situation. It's not changing my temporary situation. You know, when you are voting for the future. So it is not my I'm not here permanently. So, and it's not just changing my future as an individual. It's changing the future of all Kenyans. So it is very, very important to make the right choice. It is a constitutional right. And I know it is the first time that inmates are allowed to have been given the opportunity to vote. And it's very important for us because some of the laws that are going to be enacted may be affecting us. And it's important for us also to participate, to choose the right leaders who are going to enact the laws. I must say that I'm very, very grateful that the prisoners have been given the opportunity because in the past, being Kenyans, we were not allowed to participate in voting.
Kenyan elections have often been marred by political violence. In 2007 and 2008, post-election violence killed more than 1,000 people, leaving thousands displaced.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. A Russian-American rapprochement is taking place in the provincial city of Tula. A Californian musician and a Russian music fan are making high-end microphones of the sort used by Coldplay from old Kalashnikov arms plants. Here, I'd like to share with you this postcard from Russia. In a provincial Russian city of Tula, some 200 kilometers south of Moscow, David Brown and Pavel Bastarev have formed an unusual business partnership. One is a Californian singer. The other used to buy hazelnuts for a candy manufacturer. But now their company is making microphones for some of the world's most popular music bands using lathes once used for making Kalashnikov rifles. Precision engineered, with an elegant retro look and a clean sound praised by professionals, Brown and Bezdorev's Soyuz microphones have won fans worldwide, with Coldplay and Radiohead both using their equipment in the studio. Soyuz, meaning union, refers to the union of East and West in the company, boasting Russian engineering know-how and American musical contacts and investment. The pair has taken advantage of the lower labor costs in Russia to undercut foreign competitors. Soyuz's top-of-the-range microphone costs $3,500 against $8,000 for rival models. David Brown.
We're located in a regional Russian city where the salaries are much less than they are in Moscow, let alone in the West. Producing a mic in that way in America or in Europe would be prohibitive cost-wise.
The factory occupies two floors in a run-down building on the outskirts of Tula. Its newly renovated rooms with warm pink wallpaper make a stark contrast to gray Soviet-era apartment blocks just outside the front door. Soyuz employs 12 people that handcraft microphones using old but reliable Soviet machines. Some were bought broken, but a local handyman fixed them up. At a tense time in world politics, Brown is pitching the microphones as a sign of cooperation, highlighting how they are made using machines from a Kalashnikov plant.
I think that people who maybe previously worked in military factories or that type of thing, it would be fun for them to work on something that brings joy and beauty into the world.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. A new educational, augmented reality app gives a digital window to the body's internal organs. Virtually T works using a uniquely patterned T-shirt and was created to inspire younger generations about biology. Here's Zhao Jianfu with this postcard from the UK.
Curiscope CEO Ed Barton is on an eye-opening voyage of discovery. Not through the various skeletons and specimens on show at London's Grand Museum of Zoology, but with his own body. He's using the virtuality app, which seemingly provides a window to the body's internal organs.
This is the virtuality app. We have programmed it as such so that it recognizes the T-shirt and can see the organs as though they were really there. You can see this is a realistic heart animation, and we can move around it as though it is really there and go very, very, very close to it and also quite far away. So you can actually explore my body as though you could see under my skin.
The augmented reality app works using a mobile device camera, tracking the unique squared pattern on Barton's blue T-shirt. This allows the technology to digitally construct a seemingly lifelike window to the body, showing organs such as the heart, lungs, and stomach. As the device moves, so too does the realistic 3D model. It's as if the user has suddenly developed X-ray vision and can view their own anatomy. Virtuality was brought to life by a successful crowdfunding campaign on the website Kickstarter last April. Barton and his colleagues at London-based startup Curiscope raised almost £75,000 to make their high-tech educational idea a reality. He says they wanted to use technology to inspire younger generations about biology.
Teaching is quite incredible at the moment and getting more amazing by the day. But certainly a lot of kids that we spoke to whilst we were founding the company didn't find biology that interesting. And we just saw there was a huge opportunity to connect people to science, but also to health and to their fitness. Because what exists inside you is probably one of the most amazing things in the world. But we have skin and you cannot actually see it. And we wanted to use technology to kind of cross that boundary.
The mobile app also allows users to tap on certain organs to get a video description of what they are viewing. Perhaps best known for its simple role in popular mobile game Pokemon Go, augmented reality works by seemingly overlaying the real world with information, avatars, or user interfaces. While augmented reality and virtual reality are fast becoming popular technologies in gaming, Button believes there's a world of opportunities in areas such as education.
We'd like to think that VR and AR can really change the accessibility of science. So often science feels too complex for some children because they can't necessarily see it in a visual way. And we would like to change that, and I think we would also like to change how people think about their health and their fitness. Because it's one thing to say you need to run more to make you healthier, but actually it's really hard to contextualize. And this is broader than that as well. There's a lot of diseases, for example, that are completely invisible, and actually kids find it very, very hard to conceptualize what that means. Adults find it very, very hard to conceptualize what that means.
Tech expert Nicole Scott from website Mobile Geeks says it's applications like this that are making augmented reality a technology to watch.
Augmented reality is really interesting as it emerges in today's society because it's the blending of the two fields that make it legitimately interesting. Here, it's medical and obviously mobile and augmented reality. And it's allowing us to see into a world that perhaps we weren't able to see into before.
Button says there's a world of potential applications for augmented reality and virtual reality in education beyond their smart app. How about witnessing a science experiment too dangerous to conduct in the learning space? Or perhaps going on a digital field trip to an inaccessible location?
AR's potential in education is really about bringing things to life that perhaps have laid dormant beforehand. So we've got all these kind of manners of things that you can bring to life with virtual reality and augmented reality. And these are often things that are too dangerous. So potentially that might be a science experiment that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise. Too inaccessible, so that might be something you can't get to otherwise, or too expensive. So that might be a place you can't get to. That might be all kind of manners of things. Or it could just be something that's actually impossible at all. Even at a university level, you can't see the heart beating.
The virtuality app, which works on iOS and Android devices, can be downloaded for free, but only works with the accompanying blue, red, or green t-shirts.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
Printed metals and waterproof copper homes are among 50 ideas on show at a sustainable living exhibition in Amsterdam. The Fab City campus, open to the public, is showcasing new technologies that could help shape a greener future. Here's Shane Beacom with this postcard from the Netherlands.
Fab City is a campus of technology temporarily established at Amsterdam's Java Island in the city's Eastern Harbor District. It's presenting 50 installations and prototypes designed by students, professionals, and artists with the aim to provide sustainable solutions in urban areas. Amsterdam-based MX3D company has developed 3D metal printing technology. MX3D is equipped with a 6-axis industrial robot arm with an advanced welding machine controlled by software. Using this arm, the MX3D printer can print a wide variety of strongly structured objects like a bicycle frame, small steel objects and sheets, or different kinds of pillars that could be used by architects and artists. MX3D founder Hess van der Velden says his 3D technology has a significant advantage over ordinary 3D printers. By using an industrial robot with 6 degrees freedom of movement, MX3D's printing is not limited to a small operational space typical for 3D printers. The MX3D company is planning to 3D print a pedestrian bridge over water in the center of Amsterdam.
The biggest difference between our 3D printer and 3D printers that already exist is the building volume. Normal 3D printers have to operate in a building volume like this, and we can go meters big. So building a bridge is really a leap from where we are right now with the current technique. But this is our true innovation.
Porta Palace is a tiny home on wheels, recently completed by Dutch art and design collective Vuin Pioneers. The 18-meter square mobile home has been built with eco-friendly materials. It's timber-framed, covered with a steel roof, and fixed onto a trailer. The tiny home interior contains a small living area with a bench, kitchen, toilet, shower, and a double bed that can only be reached by climbing over a coffee table. Originally, the idea to create Porta Palace came from Hjalte Haas, who only had a limited budget to build a house for himself that was close to nature. Haas teamed up with two young architects, and after 1 year's work, Porta Palace was constructed.
People are really surprised that there's so much space in such a small house, and also with a lot of, because we use a lot of glass, it's so open, it looks open, and it interacts really with the environment.
The green battery is a temporary clean energy solution and an alternative to fuel power aggregates, which are a source of pollution and noise. A flower-shaped solar technology panel attached to a container packed with batteries offers two solutions: providing power directly from solar panels or storing and providing clean wind energy collected from the electricity grid. Green battery systems can be used for music festivals, building sites, film sets, sports, culinary, and cultural events. One unit of the green battery provides 50 kilowatt hours per sunny day, which is equivalent to 25 households' annual electricity consumption. Amsterdam Rainproof is a program initiated by Waternet, a semi-government company that maintains the water canals of Amsterdam. In recent years, Amsterdam's experienced many rainstorms, causing floods and damage to homes and city infrastructure. The program aims to encourage neighborhood initiatives, entrepreneurs, design consultants, and Amsterdam residents to come up with ideas and solutions on how to use and manage rainwater. Amsterdam Rainproof is presenting a container split in two parts, one part with its own solutions and the other without any use or management of rainwater. Two showers at the top of the container simulate rain so that visitors can observe what is happening. On the rainproof side, rainwater irrigates the green facade, and specially designed street tiles retain the rest of the water. On the flat rooftop, rainwater is used to irrigate herbs. Wickelhaus is a module concept house mostly built out of cardboard. The cardboard's wrapped in a big cast comprised of 24 layers of cardboard, each glued to the next. The process creates one 120-centimeter wide, 400-centimeter high module. A structure is then built and covered with wooden frames to protect the textile from physical impact and UV rays from the sun. Oepa Schilling is the innovator and founder of Fiction Factory, which makes Wickelhaus. He says the house will last 25 years before the textile needs replacing.
This is already like a little house I could live in, but now I want a kitchen and I want a toilet. So then we made this element where this is just all in it. So I take one away, I put my kitchen in it, I put one behind it, I put another one behind it, and then now I have a bedroom behind it. So this is already like a house which is built within a week.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn.
In Jordan, a DIY sandwich shop offering freshly baked bread is a favorite place for diners to grab and go. Whether it's breakfast, lunch, or a light supper, the concept of making your own snack has proved popular down the decades.
Before we come to the end of today's show, I would like to share with you an extra postcard from Jordan.
At Salah al-Din Bakery in Jordan's capital, Amman's bustling Abdali neighborhood, people have been tucking into the hot, freshly baked bread used to make cake sandwiches for nearly 50 years. Since 1965, the bakery has offered its signature meal 24 hours, 7 days to scores of hungry customers. But they have to make their own cake before they can eat it. The process is simple. Wait for fresh, hot bread to emerge from the traditional oven.
Take one and then make your own sandwich using eggs, cheese, and a mixture of thyme and sesame. You can even make yourself a cup of tea. A glance at the customers inside Salah al-Din gives a sense of the diversity of his clientele. From young people ending their evenings out with a cake snack, to men bringing home a cheap and delicious meal for their families, and taxi drivers stopping for a quick bite between fares. For Jordanian businessman Wael al-Hakim, a stop-off at the bakery is a daily ritual.
I've been a customer at this bakery for almost 15 years, because the cake here is very special and clean, and its way of preparing sandwiches is traditional, and I love to come here constantly.
Fawzi Saeed, an engineer from Lebanon, is visiting the bakery for the first time.
I'm from Lebanon. My wife is a Jordanian. Okay. That's the first time I come here.
Okay.
It's really amazing. She told me about this old place. It's really nice, amazing. The way they do it, it's amazing. I like it so much.
Imad Hassasni, a taxi driver, is making his own sandwich.
I started coming to this place 5 years ago. This place makes special kayak. It's very special because you can make your own sandwich. And the people who come here are familiar, and its taste is different.
And word of the bakery has even spread overseas. Keith Dean is an American tourist from Kansas City.
We don't get this in the United States. It's something different, something that we're not used to. That's what we come here for, is usually getting something different.
Owner Ahmed Darraj says Amman has a long history with cake. In the 1950s and 60s, school children would wander the streets selling cake to support their families and finance their education, taking advantage of the meal's popularity as an early breakfast.
My father is originally from Al-Fallujah, a village located 30 kilometers northeast of Gaza City. He went to Jerusalem to learn this job. Then he traveled to Amman and worked with a man. His name is Abu Kamal in Al-Tiyani Street. Then he opened this job. This kayak is special because we use the best quality ingredients and the price is suitable for all kinds of people. Rich and poor can buy it. Our customers are from all classes, many employees.
Khalid El-Tilawi owns a mechanic's garage next door to the bakery and says he is a lifelong fan of his neighbor's cake.
جاره للفرن صلاح الدين 55 سنة ويعني احنا دائما مترددين عليه وهذه الكعكة هي اصلها من
I've been Salah al-Din Bakery's neighbor for 55 years. We always go to this bakery. This kayak is originally from Jerusalem. It was famous in Jerusalem, in Bab al-Mand. His father started this business here and named it Salah al-Din. And he started to make the same kayak, which is still being made in Bab al-Mand in Jerusalem.
In the past, residents used to walk from their homes to downtown Amman, grabbing a cake on the way. Today, the bakery remains a favorite stop for people working in Abdali's bustling commercial center and a must-do for tourists. With that, we wrap up today's postcards. For program producer Zhao Jianfu, I'm Wen Jie. See you next week.